Hi, I'm Kay Kinsey, and part of this is an integration of nurse family partnership information from Philadelphia, as well as an update for our Healthy Smiles program that we were doing in Philadelphia. And I have no relationship to disclose, and Jessica Graham, who's here, who is an AmeriCorps Vista worker who did not know what she was getting into, has no financial disclosures. What we wanted to do is share with you some of the issues and dynamics of being in public health nursing and some of the opportunities that we have in positions as public health nurses and as administrators. So this is an update for something that I did in 2008, which was our first pilot program. And really, it talked about an individual by the name of Diamante Driver, who died of an abscess tooth. He was 12 years old and homeless with no medical assistance. I also want to tell you that as I'm talking about Nurse Family Partnership, that its national service office is here in Colorado, in Denver, several blocks away. And so you can certainly look up the website and learn more about Nurse Family Partnership if you're not as familiar about it in your community. This is one of our nurses, a mom and a little toddler now. And the reason this started in Philadelphia, it started more than 10 years ago when the mayor at that particular time created a children's cabinet. And we were really looking at rigor of research trials, but also wanted to reduce child abuse and neglect within the city of Philadelphia. I'm not going to go through every slide. I just want to point out certain features before we get to the information that we have to share with you today. However, we are 12% of the population in the state of Pennsylvania, which means that for our 400 moms that typically we serve, we have about 3,000 to 4,000 that we really could serve. The goal is to serve 50 to 60% of low-income first-time mothers-to-be within a community. We have over 2,000 that have been registered and enrolled to date with over 650 graduates. And basically, this program is based on prevention, which always meets what I think are the public health principles that we all, if we're in public health nursing or in practice, really want to work towards. So this is the eligibility criteria, and one is you have to live in Philadelphia County, which will frame more when we look at the dental information. In 2008, we looked at the pediatric residents for our children because we can easily get that information from their medical assistance billing that we do. And you can see the cluster of our group of people that we serve, the babies, and we're principally in the most marginalized communities in Philadelphia. And these are some of our staff characteristics, but as we spoke about earlier, we all want them to have a public health nurse orientation and have a calling to want to work in Philadelphia. So some of these other things are there. I would say that the last speaker spoke about bed bugs, and in Philadelphia, we're the second city back behind New York, and I don't think that's a good thing to advertise, but we now have manuals for all our nurses about how to deal with bed bugs, and they all wear certain kinds of clothing now. This is some of our staff, so you know that we have 19 people who are really involved in this kind of work. So we have colleagues who share like experiences and passions. So this also would be on the website for Nurse Family, the National Service Office. And I can tell you there's a lot of information, a lot of papers and data collection that we do concurrently to doing home visits or afterwards. And these are the principles in which the domains that we work within. Now, I want to tell you a little bit about our moms and our children, because 60% of them are teenagers, not yet eligible to vote, and then themselves, if you think about them, children, despite the fact that they're considered emancipated minors. And their income has fallen substantially, from $13,500 to $10,500 to this year, $7,500. It speaks to the abysmal poverty levels that we have in our city. And these are some of our outcomes, because I didn't want to think that we don't do anything. We do lots of good work. So we did a pilot for our dental health questionnaire. And the reason we really did that was because we, as you'll see, there's only one question in our national NFP database that asks about dental health. And that the reality is we should not ignore mental health or dental health when we're dealing with our families. And yet in our community, the payment is all divided up separately. Physical health, you get one payment. Dental health, you get another. Mental health, you get another. It's like you're not one whole person. You have to walk around and try to access many systems. None of them, I think, are friendly. Most of them, the editorial, are hostile. And there was no longitudinal information about mothers-to-be and their parenting, their knowledge about dental health, not only for themselves, but for their infants. And again, I spoke about Diamante Driver, but if you read that headline, you thought it was just a terrible, terrible thing to have occurred. It was that they lost their Medicaid, they were living in a shelter, and the younger brother had the 6 rotten teeth. So the mother was focusing on getting that child to get the teeth fixed, and yet he had the tooth abscess and ultimately died. So I wanted to give you some literature that you can certainly look up and read yourself that validates why we should, in public health, regardless of what system we work in, think that dental health is equally as important as mental health and as physical health. Because the social determinants of health and how you get employed typically have to do with how you look. And if you don't have teeth acceptable in our country, which is white pearly teeth, you have a harder problem. And if you've ever worked in a lower income community and women in typical speak like this and then they take their hand down, it may be because they want to mask what they consider is their oral hygiene or their needs. And typically our children and parents really need to be engaged in a healthcare system that has them want to come back. So everyone talks about access, and I'm going to say use. Because it makes no difference if you access it only once. If you don't want to come back and use it as you should, as a consumer, we haven't done what we needed to do in the public health community. And this is, Malcolm Gladwell really writes wonderful articles, typically in the New Yorker, so I urge you to go back and read anything that he's written. You don't necessarily have to agree with him, but it certainly gives you insight about what our challenges are here in our community. And obviously, if you work with ethnic and racial minority groups, it depends on their idea of what they need to access and how often they need to access healthcare. And you can see that if you look back on our information, our majority of population that we serve are African American and Latino. And they themselves have longer intervals between visits. Some of that has a great deal to do with provider scheduling. And actually, if the moms don't have good oral health, their children are more likely not to have good oral health themselves. And I don't know how many of you know about Text for Babies that got rolled out last APHA meeting. And it is a wonderful way that mothers can access on their cell phones. And many of our low-income families have cell phones. They may not have the same cell phone every month, but they do have a cell phone. And they can use access. So Text for Babies will send them texts about their progress throughout their pregnancy and then their child's development for their first year of life. And I'm sure it's probably here in the exhibit hall somewhere. So what happens before birth and what lasts a lifetime? And what's the puzzle that we need to put together? Everyone would think about these as being common sense factors at what people don't, why they don't or do access healthcare and dental health in particular. But do you really know? And how often do you separate out the information that you might have to filter so you can better help your staff as well as the clients or participants you're working with about how to help? So the first questionnaire involved 123 at-will responses from Nurse Family Partnership members or participants, and that's part of what it was. We had 355 at the time, and 123 completed the tool. So that's what I provided for information at the earlier APHA meeting. But we learned that we needed to refine the tool, and we probably needed to make it, I felt as an administrator, we needed to make it mandatory. Because if it's not in the system, it may not get done. But you'll have better information if you just put it in the process of doing this dental health information or education or survey, if you want to call it that, periodically throughout the program. And our program goes from pregnancy until the child turns 2 years old. Now, I can share with you, like anyone else, it's human nature not to like to do another piece of paperwork. So it took a while to standardize this information. But we wanted to add another component about where you're referring someone you worked with when you were implementing the dental health questionnaire, And what we were also wanting to do, we also want to try to find some funds, which we haven't been very successful in doing, as far as using providing the tools. And there are some conflicts about how much you would provide to a family and who would be really using what we provided. So we developed a new local database, and this is only one piece of this local database. The public health nurses enter a national database for NFP, and they also enter information in a local database. Has a great deal, a lot of what we're asking has to do with the social determinants of health. Because as we write grants, I can't just say what's happening at a national level. I need to be able to inform potential funders what's happening in our community. This is our tool. It's one page. It's very, very simple. And I know you can't see any of it. The intent was not to see it here, but to know that it exists. And you can do many of that in your own community, depending upon what you want to need, what your need is and your interest. So embedded in this prior year, and that's what Jessica did not know she was going to get into when she came as a VISTA worker, I gave her a folder with 300 of them at the time. It felt like that, right, Jessica? And then she started entering them in a database. So we merged the 123 into what looks at the prior year of 226. And the reason was we rolled out the local database for all the nurses to start last October. So now we have 226. And from October of last year to this year, as we're reporting now, at the end of September, it was like 233 who entered the different database. So for the prior time period, 38% had not seen a dentist in the past year. And this current year, 28% reported. Now remember, this is all self-reports. So it's human nature to want to tell someone that you're working with, who's your nurse, something that we cannot validate other than trust that they're giving you information that they want to share with you and it's accurate. So the last time they saw the dentist in the prior year was 28%, and the current year said they 22% not seen a dentist. But you notice that some said never. And again, I'm looking at their Medicaid card, what they knew their medical card would be accepted because that is important. And you can see what they've said for prior year and current year and their needs. Now, we did not prioritize the current needs, and they stayed pretty close to what had been our first presentation 2 years ago. However, there was never one need. So some of them knew what they needed, but they were not going back for what their dental health needs were. Now, they did say they brushed their teeth, but flossing was not typical. And they said, yes, they plan to brush their baby's teeth. Now, the problem is that the messages for our dental community have changed so much that grandmothers, mothers, great-grandmothers, we learn something different about when our children are going to get dental health. And so the messages have really changed in the community. So how many providers, prenatal, postpartum, primary care providers, could the mothers, the NFP pregnant women, because we administer it when they're 36 weeks pregnant because we want them, or within the four, we try to do it within the first 4 weeks that we enroll them, but there are many materials that everyone has to review. So we can do it from the first 4 weeks up to 36 weeks of their pregnancy, and then we do the dental tool again when the baby's 4 months old. So an initial report, 58% said that no healthcare, they could recall that no healthcare provider in a primary or prenatal setting had talked to them about their oral health. And 42% said that someone may have talked about their teeth, but not necessarily talked about how to care for their baby's teeth. But this prior year, when we looked at it all together, 72% could not recall. And this year, to date, 73% could not recall that anyone had ever spoken to them about their dental health. Now, that could mean a lot of people were talking about weight, WIC, et cetera, and it got embedded in this huge information overload, and no one remembers. But I wanted to show you where our families live in Philadelphia, our 1.5 million folks, and the stars there are where our pediatric dental providers happen to be. But remember, access and use are very different, and we're not so certain that they access pediatric dental providers. And we just colored it a little differently so you could see by our zip codes where people were located. It can take you 2 buses to get to your pediatric dental provider. And how many of you want to take your baby on a bus or take two a toddler and a little one? So we learned that you cannot assume that your primary care provider has done what you would think that they would have done, that families have toothbrushes, because honestly a lot of them would say they didn't have toothbrushes even though they said they brushed their teeth every day, that they floss and brush their teeth every day, that they have the dental resources that they know and the emergency numbers. But we should, a colleague and I, we were talking about that. We should not assume that mothers do not care. It's they are uninformed. So we're beginning to work with our early childhood providers about this. And these are some of the lists of people that we're working with to be able to reinforce this. Now, some of our pediatric dentists say that the first visit a mother makes is an assessment visit. Then they tell them what's wrong, and they have to come back. Now, there's a big hurdle between knowing what's wrong and wanting to come back. And so some of our pediatric dental providers are now thinking about incentivizing, like a $25 coupon to come back and get some of your treatment done. Otherwise, they know that people are leaving and not necessarily ever coming back. And we do have mobile dental units. However, that may represent their only dental health care. So there are some mixed messages about having mobile dental health units come out into the community. There is a Philadelphia pacemaker team that has been formed as of October 2010 because a lot of the pediatric dental practices, particularly in the universities, Temple and Penn, are asking why aren't people coming and filling up their slots. Jessica wasn't there, but I certainly went on a rant about why they weren't coming, but neither here nor there. I'm going to skip the parts about teaching, but these are some of what our public health nurses are sharing with the women and about their babies. Now, see that? That's what's the conflict. First tooth, go see the dentist. That's the message that's out there now. And there are dentists that won't see a child until they're three and can sit calmly in a parent's lap. But the message is now that you should be going to take a child to the dentist. Now think about a grandmother in the house that says, I never did that. We didn't have to do that. So there's a lot of conflict about the messages that you're giving now. And then Spiffies is a baby tooth wipe. I spoke about that in 2008. We bought a lot of Spiffies. We made an investment because we had a grant at the time, but Spiffies expire. So you gotta be careful about how much you buy before it expires. And these are the rules of two. They're simple, but not many people have really thought about that or heard that message. So we're using some additional resources. And there are some listed here. And I did want to tell you that there are two sessions also on early childhood dental health, session 5071 and 5178. You can find it in our very thick handouts. And I really wanted to, I know we're running out of time, and I think that next steps will be something we can dialogue separately about and not have me speak anymore. But I want to introduce you to one of our grads. Their children graduate when they're two, and she was a little older, and her mom had a second baby, but they look very healthy and well on the start of being productive citizens, which is what we want. Thank you very much.